Greetings, friends. This talk introduces the Truth of Happiness course and the first week's Dhamma study on Shamatha Vipassana meditation. This talk was presented at our Saturday morning Dhamma class in Frenchtown, New Jersey on December 5th, 2015. I hope you find benefit from this talk. Peace.
Again, welcome everyone. So, this morning's class is the first of 10 based on my book, The Truth of Happiness. And the book and these classes are, they're about establishing Shamatha Vipassana meditation within the wider framework that it was taught, and also a few other topics that are important to develop as we develop our understanding of the Buddha's Dhamma. So, this first week, we're going to I'll introduce and talk about Shamatha Vipassana meditation and just the practical aspects of that, but also how it relates to the rest of the path. Next week is the Four Foundations of Mindfulness. The week after that is the Four Noble Truths. The three following weeks are on the Eightfold Path. The seventh week is on Anicca, Anatta, and Dukkha. Anicca is impermanence. Anatta is the not-self characteristic, and Dukkha is the Dukkha refers to the underlying unsatisfactory nature of life. The following week is on dependent origination and the five clinging aggregates, and we close with hindrances to practice and how to best establish a practice in our busy lives. The reason why it came up. A few people have asked me why I presented week 7 and 8 the way I did. And a few people asked very specifically, if the Buddha awakened to dependent origination, which is what he awakened to, why isn't that taught first? But the Buddha spent 6 years of arduous seeking to develop that understanding. And that understanding is what he presented as the Four Noble Truths, including this meditation method and the Eightfold Path. So it's much more relevant and easier to understand how it fits in after we've laid the foundation that we're going to in the next few weeks. So and over these 10 weeks, we're going to look at all of the key Buddhist teachings. Everything the Buddha taught for 45 years relates back to the Four Noble Truths. One of the problems with modern Buddhism is that a lot of the different lineages have kind of picked and choose the things that they liked that the Buddha taught and then taken them out of context. And when you take a lot of these things out of context and don't relate them back to the Four Noble Truths and the Eightfold Path, they just don't make any sense. They're just not applicable in a useful way. So even something like compassion, it's a wonderful thing that we develop compassion. And most human beings are inherently compassionate. But the refined mindfulness that the Buddha teaches, that's developed within the Eightfold Path, explains to us how to be compassionate while maintaining a deep wisdom of understanding how to act compassionately. So compassion, just as a concept, can also be very damaging. We can start forcing ourselves on other people, insisting that other people be different because we're being compassionate. It can also lead into a lot of other things. And that's just one example of how things taken out of context can be at least a distraction from understanding. So the Buddha taught a very specific Dhamma. He taught an Eightfold Path for developing awakening. He taught how that relates to the world. That's Anicca, Anatta, and Dukkha. So as we develop this course, we're going to gain a great understanding of these three things that are called the three marks of existence. It really is the three things that we're looking to gain insight to. So Shamatha Vipassana means, Shamatha means to quiet the mind, to gain a tranquil mind. And Vipassana means to gain insight, but it's not a general insight. It's not an insight into everything that's occurring in the world. That's just another distraction. It's insight into very specific characteristics, and those are the three marks of existence. So we're trying to develop concentration with our meditation practice. That's primarily why we meditate, so that we can gain insight into Anatta, Anicca, and Dukkha, and how these three things interrelate and cause to create an unsatisfactory nature in life, and a distraction from who we are. Any questions about what I just said? Is that clear? Or at least conceptually clear? I don't mean that you understand completely impermanence or anatta.
Very clear.
So when the Buddha described the phenomenal world, he described that world as anicca. Hello, Ellie. How are you? It's good to see you, Nora. How's your practice?
Good.
Good. Ellie?
It's all right.
Okay. So I think you know this is the first week of a 10-week course based on the truth of happiness, and this first week is on Shamatha Vipassana, so I'm introducing that. One of the things that we gain, or the main thing that we gain out of meditation, is a deep sense of, or a deep level of concentration. We're able to stay focused. We're no longer distracted by those three marks of existence. We're no longer distracted by the impermanent nature of all things. We're no longer distracted by our own confused sense of self. And we're no longer distracted by that underlying characteristic known as dukkha. Because we start understanding the interplay and how we are responsible for our own unsatisfactory experience of life. Correct? Good? Clear? Along the way, we're going to discuss the refined mindfulness that's developed through the Buddha's teachings. And so the Buddha was the, in my opinion, he's never been voted this or anything, the Buddha was the world's greatest thinker and most insightful thinker. And it's because of how he developed his thinking and that path that he developed, that he taught all of us, that helped refine his thinking. And so what I mean by that, the concentration that we develop through Shamatha Vipassana meditation allows us to mindfully engage in the world and with our own thoughts in a way that leads to awakening. Does that make sense? So we're inclining our minds away from that distraction of the unsatisfactory nature of life. We're inclining our minds away from what's ruled by anatta, a not self-characteristic, and towards an awakened and fully mature human being. So there's nothing magical or mystical about this. It's a direct training on how to think and what to think about, what to hold in mind. And we'll get into these deeper levels of refined mindfulness as we develop the course. But the Buddha taught mindfulness in two very specific ways and in no other way. He wasn't interested in the generalized type of mindfulness. But he taught mindfulness in relation to the Four Noble Truths that we're going to get into next week. And then he taught to be mindful of each factor of the Eightfold Path. And so then why did he teach what we're going to learn today, Shamatha Vipassana meditation, that deep concentration? So that we can remain mindful of the things that we need to remain mindful of and stop being distracted by our own thoughts. Any questions about that? And does that make sense? Laura?
It makes sense.
How do you do it?
A lot of work.
Yeah. it seems like it's a lot of work. And I guess it is. I'll kind of give you that. But it's the most fruitful work we can engage in. It develops awakening. It develops a refined mindfulness that allows us to live our lives in lasting peace and happiness no matter what's occurring.
When these things come up in meditation, thoughts and there's the letting it go, but there's some sort of concentration on what? How do you evaluate, where's the evaluation time? How does that look like?
You bring up probably one of the most important things. I'm glad you brought it up. Meditation is not the time to figure stuff out. It's not the time to be ruminating on problems or it's not even the time to gain a specific type of insight. Like, well, I got this problem where I react to this certain person all the time. So I'm going to use that and I'm going to quiet my mind and look at that. You're not gaining concentration. But it's off your cushion as you develop a deeper concentration within that wider framework of the Eightfold Path that you gain your true insight and understanding. So when you look at meditation, meditation is primarily for developing concentration. And then we'll talk a little bit about the insight probably next week, I think, how insight arises. But if you remember that Shamatha Vipassana meditation is to develop concentration within this wider framework, then every meditation session is a successful one or a useful one or effective one. If we think we're supposed to be gaining great or insight or mystical experiences, or, you know, how does the cosmos work, the Buddha talked specifically that don't even consider those things. Develop concentration within this wider framework and you'll gain everything you need to know. So again, we're not looking for answers, we're looking for concentration. But again, as your concentration develops and your mindfulness becomes more refined, everything gets answered. You understand these problems that we have. And you understand that the unsatisfactory nature of life is because we don't understand ourselves and we want things to be different than they are. We become so enamored with ourselves that we think we have a right to insist that our lives be different than they are, including what's going on around us. Now, isn't that the essence of arrogance? But yet most of us live our lives in that struggle, wanting things to be different than they are. And when we can finally accept life as life occurs, we live in lasting peace and happiness. We've also gained incredibly refined mindfulness to just see that and let that be at peace. That doesn't mean, along the way, one of the great things that we gain insight to, and it's because of impermanence, is that there's a complete and significant difference between approval and acceptance. We can accept anything. It does not mean we have to approve of it. It's two different things. In fact, it's two different mental processes that go along with acceptance and approval. So a good example is when violence occurs, and it seems like it's happening more and more, we don't approve of it. But we also understand there's nothing I can do about it right now. And so we accept it. It's just part of life. And that aspect of acceptance doesn't mean that I have to like it or dislike it. It's just a mindful awareness of what's occurring. A lot of times when we start insisting that in order for me to accept something, I have to approve it, then we're rejecting most of life. And we can't see things clearly, can we? Because then we're clouding it from our own likes and dislikes, from this thing that the Buddha said is anatta. So I just want to talk about that briefly, and then we're going to get into Shamatha Vipassana meditation. When the Buddha When the Buddha described what we normally see as a self, he said, that's anatta. And that's taken so many magical and mystical connotations, and whole Buddhist traditions have grown up around and misunderstanding. The Buddha didn't say there's no self. He simply said that what you think of yourself is not a self. You have a wrong view. You don't understand it. And he only said that so he starts inclining our minds towards awakening. He's telling us very directly that you need to change your minds. You need to refine your mindfulness. You need to learn another way of looking at yourself. And that gets to the first factor of the Eightfold Path or right view. And again, we're going to talk about that beginning in week four. But that the whole Dhamma is about turning our minds away from a confused mind state towards a mind state that has a quality of mind of this refined mindfulness and holds all eight factors of the Eightfold Path within it. And that's where we're going. Moore, you had a question?
No, I think I'll pass for right now.
So that's where we're going with this. And it's everything that is included in this course and everything that the Buddha taught is directly and practically applied in our lives. He didn't teach anything that's mystical or magical. He didn't teach anything that we have to be a certain person in order to gain the understanding. Nothing is given to us or bestowed on us by a higher source or some kind of Buddhist god. The Buddha wasn't a god. It was just a human being who awakened. But the great truth of that is that it's through our efforts that we can awaken. We're not dependent on anything outside of ourselves. The Buddha gave us a complete path, and that's an Eightfold Path, that once it's fully developed, we can awaken like him. So there's something in the Dhamma called the Three Refuges. The Buddha talked about this too, and again, this is something else that's been misunderstood and misapplied. But the three refuges or the three jewels are the Buddha, the Dhamma, and the Sangha. And what that means is we take refuge in knowing that a human being who was known as Siddhartha Gautama awakened. And if a human being awakened, we can do the same, can't we? The Buddha never claimed that he was anything special. He was just a guy who figured it out. But he so cared for other people that he spent the next 45 years teaching other people how he could do the same. He could have awakened and gone back to his father's kingdom and lived in an incredibly luxurious life. But he didn't. He lived in robes with a begging bowl for 45 years so he could teach this Dhamma. And so we can take refuge in his teaching. We can take refuge in the Dhamma, knowing that it's his teaching. Of course, we can't take refuge in something that the Buddha didn't teach, did he? So that's why it's important to understand this. And then that third aspect, taking refuge in the Sangha, is acknowledging that we can't do this alone. We really need each other. The Buddha told his cousin Ananda one day that the most important aspect of the Dhamma is this, Sangha, that we need to do this together. And in discussion in these classes, everybody supports each other. It's really amazing some of the things that come up in class and how helpful it all is. So we have that. We have the model of the Buddha, the human being that did it. We have his teachings, and we have a supportive Sangha. We have everything we need to awaken. All that we need to do is integrate it into our lives wholeheartedly. So, Shema, more?
So, I can I make one comment?
Sure.
And a supportive comment? I pass because I don't want to create any confusion. I thought your introduction was crystal clear and very helpful. So, thank you.
You're welcome.
And I think it's been my experience and my understanding that as one begins to develop these awarenesses and move through the path as a perhaps, that there's relative insights and absolute insights. So even though, like what you had said, which is absolutely, of course, insight in this tradition, are known as they're not intellectual insights. However, as we move through our day, or even in meditation, we might gain a glimpse. It's not the purpose, but of it. Oh, I see now. You know, just what was going on there. It's not the purpose of meditation, but it's one of the nice benefits of a practice, is that our life begins to open up a little bit more, and we're not driven by reactive patterns as we were in the past. And maybe, so just, and this is in comment to Laura's question, that our life begins to perhaps not be so static and repetitive. Right? We begin to let go of some of the distractions, and then in a moment-to-moment interaction with another human being, letting go of reactivity, we might be able to have a more spacious response, a less conditioned response, a truly compassionate response. That compassion arising as a result of letting go of reactivity, noticing our reactivity, letting it go, and acting. And it can be quite a nice way to live. So I didn't want to my point was that is that I'm not awakened, and I can see the fruits of practice on a daily basis.
Yeah, it very, very quickly as we start integrating the Eightfold Path into our lives change. Our interactions with people change. We become more loving and compassionate and patient. But you can let that be a side, you can let that sidetrack you. So you bring up a good point, Warren. There's a lot of Buddhism today is presented as a way to make you feel better in your own life. And that's great, but that's not what the Buddha was talking about. The Buddha was talking about specifically awakening and keeping it, that refined mindfulness inclines us. In fact, the sixth factor of the Eightfold Path, right effort, inclines us towards remembering that there's a goal to this. It's not just about being a better human being. It's about awakening fully, and we can get easily distracted by concepts instead of remaining within this framework of the Eightfold Path. So the reason why I keep emphasizing that is that the eight factors of the Eightfold Path keep us focused. They keep us inclined towards the insight that we need to gain, the real insight. So it's not so much insight into every single occurrence that happens in life. That's just a distraction. When the Buddha described the First Noble Truth, he said that life itself is unsatisfactory. So if we keep looking to weigh our Dhamma practice and how we're doing in relation to the unsatisfactory nature of life, we're just going to be more confused, because we're always insisting that we need to feel better in relation to that, rather than putting all of that distraction aside. That's really what it's about. Again, this refined type of mindfulness. And what does that mean? Initially, that looks like, that you sound like we're supposed to just disavow the whole world. What it really means is that when you can develop this path fully, for the first time in your life, you can be fully living your life as life occurs. And that's where lasting peace and happiness arises. It's not in concepts. It's not in hoping that I get better. It's in learning how to live in this life, as life occurs, as you are, not as something else. Again, the Buddha didn't say there's no such thing as a self. He says what you think of a self is not a self. And learn how to gain insight into those three marks of existence. And then he showed us how to do that with the Eightfold Path. And then you'll have lasting peace and happiness. You don't need to search. I guess what I'm saying is you don't need to search for it first. Develop the path, and you'll have everything you need. Maura?
I'm sorry. What I said sounded like I was trying to say things are better. As if things, you'll see the fruits of practice. And it's been my experience that, in fact, it's not better. It's different. You know. So being able to see anger as it arises, not being dead to what's coming up and what's leaving, seeing the truth of what's happening, which I would say for me, so maybe life is a little bit more uncomfortable than it used to be.
Yeah.
But that's okay. So that's what I was trying to refer to. It's not and that the whole, as you clearly state and continue to state, it's not a self-improvement project. It's the opposite of that. However, in the recognizing that as one goes through their life, there's a little bit more. It's just a little bit more clarity.
Oh yeah, as your concentration deepens and your mindfulness gets refined to the point where you understand what you're looking at, when anger arises, you'll just recognize it as anger instead of just being so distracted that you don't do anything about it.
We're saying but, you're the cause of it.
And as you said, Laura, as you asked, as you develop this path, you'll recognize that anger is arising from not seeing things clearly. You'll relate it right back to right view. I'm lacking in understanding. So I'll just touch on dependent origination briefly, because we're going to get into it in the eighth week. Dependent origination, which is what the Buddha awakened to, says from ignorance through 12 causative links, all the suffering, all the unsatisfactory nature, all the confusion in life arises from that ignorance. But it's a very specific type of ignorance. The Buddha didn't say we're human beings and human beings are just ignorant. He said that we're ignorant of one topic, the Four Noble Truths. It's ignorance of the Four Noble Truths that leads to all suffering. So everything the Buddha taught was in relation to that first understanding. Everything he taught relates back to the Four Noble Truths. So everything in the Dhamma relates back to understanding the Four Noble Truths. When the Buddha described an awakened human being, he described that awakened being in one of two words, either released or unbound, from clinging and craving. And he described the mind of an awakened human being as calm. And what the task he laid out for people to develop, and the Dhamma is really about developing some skills so specific tasks can be accomplished, and we'll talk about that during the Eightfold Path. The task to accomplish as far as the First Noble Truth is to understand suffering. When the Buddha described his teachings, he says, I teach the arising of suffering and the cessation of suffering, nothing more. And for 45 years, that's all he taught. That's a pretty deep subject, though. But he didn't teach understanding suffering to develop more of a distraction by it. And what I mean by that is by being constantly focused on suffering and looking at suffering and being mindful of suffering. He taught these other concepts that where suffering arises. So we gain understanding of suffering not by being focused on suffering, but by understanding the interplay between anicca, anatta, which results in suffering. Is that clear? Because that's a very important point in the Dhamma. We're not here to just keep dredging up suffering and notice all the suffering in the world and to embrace suffering. When I hear that, it just drives me crazy. Why do I need to embrace something? I need to understand it. That's a completely different thing. So the whole Dhamma is about developing understanding of suffering so that we can recognize it and eliminate the suffering in our lives from ending craving and clinging. And again, one of the things that Moore is talking about is recognizing craving and clinging. And how does it come up? One of the ways it comes up, Moore uses a word, when I'm angry. If I'm angry, it's because I want something to be different than it is. And that thing that I want different than it is in relation to this ego personality that the Buddha said is like foam on an ocean. Don't let it have that kind of power over you. All of our unhappiness and confusion and unsatisfactory nature come from this misunderstanding and misidentification as this self. So again, we're gaining understanding into the most we're gaining understanding into the most relevant object that there is, and it's who we think we are.
Thank you for listening. For more Dhamma talks and articles, please visit crossrivermeditation.com. We rely on donations from our listeners to provide these talks. If you have found this talk helpful in developing your understanding of the Dhamma, please consider a donation at crossrivermeditation.com. This talk is copyrighted and is made available under Creative Commons 4.0 license. Please visit crossrivermeditation.com for use and distribution information. Peace.